Shalom, welcome to AshJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Harab Meir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about the Republican presidential debate that took place last Wednesday on October 28th, 2015. Because we're hoping and praying that that debate will be a game changer. A game changer means that it will change the dynamics of the race for the Republican presidential nomination. We're hoping that happens because Ted Cruz won that debate hands down. There's no question he won that debate decisively. He finally was given a chance to show that he is a champion debater, that he is by far the best debater and the best speaker running for president today, and that his great talent would be a tremendous asset in a race against Hillary Clinton. It would also be an asset if he were president. It would enable him to govern and convince people to accept his policies. We saw because Ronald Reagan was a great speaker, he was able to get most of his policies enacted. Ted Cruz proved that he has that talent. He has that speaking power, that power as an orator. He proved that in the debate. So we're hoping that that begins to change the dynamics of the election. I don't know if it will, because sometimes it seems like nothing is going to change these dumb Republican voters. And oh, how dumb they are, supporting Donald Trump, who's a left-wing Democrat all of his life, who supported and gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Clintons, and to Harry Reid, and to Nancy Pelosi, and to all the left-wing Democrats, and then switched just in time to run for president, pretended now that he's a Republican. I mean, what a farce. Someone who all his life has supported abortion and supported the sodomite agenda and supported affirmative action and supported amnesty. He supported amnesty. In 2012, he criticized Mitt Romney for not supporting amnesty. He said the reason Mitt Romney lost is because he lost the Hispanic vote, that he should have supported amnesty. I mean, what a joke. How can people be so dumb? And then all the Republicans who continue to say that they're going to support Ben Carson, who is completely, utterly unqualified to be the mayor of a small town. Forget about being president of the United States. He couldn't even be the mayor of a small town. I mean, Ben Carson made a speech in 2013. Where he supposedly indirectly criticized Barack Hussein Obama, where he said things that were interpreted as indirect criticism of Barack Hussein Obama, and right away, all the Republicans and conservatives and everybody was saying, wow, a black guy said something that can be interpreted as indirectly criticizing Barack Hussein Obama? A black guy said something critical of Obama? Let's make him president of the United States. That's literally what happened. I mean, this is so insane. Ben Carson also has been a left-wing Democrat almost all of his adult life. And he still is. Even in the debate, they asked him about how he agreed with, while he was on the board of all of these companies, because they stuck him, because he's a black guy, they stuck him on the board of all of these companies. And while he was on the board of all these companies, he was approving the most pro-gay company policies you can imagine. Everything pro-gay. And literally pressuring company. I mean, they literally pressure people who work for their companies to accept the gay agenda. And they make their company a gay company, in effect. And Ben Carson supported all of this. And in the debate, he acknowledged that he supported all of this. He said, we are not homophobic. We can't be homophobic. We have to support the gay community. I mean, this is the way he was speaking in the debate. The only thing he has come out against is so-called gay marriage. Because if he supported that, he would have no chance of getting the Republican nomination. He probably privately supports that too. But other than that, he completely supports the so-called gay agenda. And in these companies, he was 100% pro-gay. His business manager, Armstrong Williams, is gay. He denies that he's gay, but he's being sued for sexually harassing a man that worked with him, and it's being alleged that he sexually harassed numerous men. That's the guy who's managing all of his business affairs, Armstrong Williams. So Ben Carson and Donald Trump, they're not conservatives, they're not real Republicans. They have no ability to lead this country. They would never win an election against Hillary Clinton. Never. They'd be slaughtered in an election against Hillary Clinton. They're just a farce, a joke. And they would be defeated so overwhelmingly, it would be an absolute joke. And yet polls show that the majority of Republican voters want one of these two incredible jokes. They want one of these two jokes to be their candidate for president of the United States. It's just unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. When they have a candidate like Ted Cruz, who is so well qualified and such a true leader and a consistent, principled, sincere conservative, I'm hoping at least in the debate that finally Republicans start to wake up and start to turn to Ted Cruz. There have been three Republican debates so far. In the first two debates, Ted Cruz was hardly given a chance to speak. When he did speak, he was excellent. In the first two debates, he was also excellent. But he wasn't given a chance to open his mouth up. They ignored him in the debates. He had very little time in the debates. But one thing that has happened in all three debates is that Donald Trump and Ben Carson have lost all three debates. They've shown they don't know how to debate. They're not good speakers. They're not good debaters. Aside from the fact that their positions on the issues are a joke and are contrary to everything that Republicans and conservatives stand for. And so, if you really want to rebel against the establishment and you really want an outsider, Ted Cruz is the ultimate outsider. By the way, Donald Trump and Ben Carson are not outsiders. Donald Trump spent his whole life, he brags about it, bribing politicians. Remember, he bribed Hillary Clinton. He gave her a lot of money. He gave Hillary Clinton a big contributions just to, and what did he bribe her for? He wanted to make sure she comes to his wedding. He gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Clintons just because he wanted Hillary Clinton to come to his wedding and Bill Clinton to come to his wedding. That was the big thing that he wanted in his life. This is the type of empty-headed, egomaniacal piece of garbage that we're going to make president of the United States. And Ben Carson, I mean, his background is even more ridiculous. He changes his position. You know that Ben Carson changes his position sometimes three or four times a day? He'll say one thing in the morning, and then he'll have a completely opposite position in the afternoon. In the morning, he says he wants to eliminate Medicare and Medicaid. Then he realizes tens of millions of Americans, especially elderly Americans, are getting Medicare, so he backs off of that. And in the afternoon, he already says, no, I didn't. No, actually, I changed my mind about that. I mean, this is just so ridiculous. It's so farcical. These low-information Republican voters. It's just such a... And they are low-information voters. Because the voters that are better informed do support Ted Cruz. The better they're informed, the higher level of support Ted Cruz gets. The better educated, by the way, the Republican voters are, the higher level of support Ted Cruz gets, and the less support Carson and Trump get. So let's hope that this turns the race around finally. People see that Ben Carson and Donald Trump are not serious candidates. They're just a joke. Let's hope this finally turns things around, because let me tell you something. If so-called conservatives continue to support someone like Carson or Trump, if they continue to do that, you know what's going to happen? Carson and Trump, I don't think, are going to win the nomination, but Marco Rubio will. Marco Rubio, the establishment guy, will get in. If Carson and Trump block Ted Cruz from becoming the conservative alternative, in the end, you'll probably wind up having Marco Rubio, the establishment candidate, win. And that'll be a real... And Marco Rubio, he's the ultimate amnesty candidate. You know, they just bragged about the fact that Paul Singer, the self-hating Jewish billionaire, is supporting Marco Rubio now. He announced he's supporting Marco Rubio. Paul Singer is the guy who gives huge contributions to the George Soros Amnesty Organization. He financially supports and raises money for George Soros' Amnesty Organization. And he demands of all candidates, he wants all the candidates to support same-sex marriage. He's satisfied with Marco Rubio, even though Marco Rubio says he doesn't support same-sex marriage. He's satisfied with him, though, because Marco Rubio said he would go to a same-sex wedding. He would go to gay weddings. And he has nothing against gay weddings, and he would go to gay weddings. What are we coming to? Don't you realize this is an urgent situation? And Ted Cruz really is our last best hope for saving the Republicans, for winning a Republican victory, and for saving the country. Would Ted Cruz defeat Hillary Clinton? I don't know, by the way. I don't know, because America has become a left-leaning country. You know, twice voted for Barack Hussein Obama in 2008, 2012. So America's become a majority-left country. So I don't know if Ted Cruz would defeat her, but I think he would have the best chance. Of all the Republicans running, I think he would have the best chance. I think he offers us the best hope, and he certainly would be the best president. He certainly is the best speaker, the best debater. And he at least has an ideology, a philosophy that would enable us to enthusiastically work for him and support him against Hillary Clinton. So let's hope that happens. You know, the first contest is in Iowa on February 1st, about 3 months from now. So we're going to see what happens. They're going to be important developments. We're going to keep you abreast of what's going on. You want to find out the really important things in this campaign, you tune in to JTF, because we'll keep you aware of what the important things are. There are two important endorsements in Iowa that Ted Cruz, we hope, will get, God willing, that are very important as far as getting conservative support and getting evangelical Christian support. Iowa, half of all Iowa voters are Republican voters. Half of all Iowa Republican voters are evangelical Christians. So if Ted Cruz can get the vast majority of those voters, he wins. There are two people in Iowa that have tremendous influence with the evangelical Christians, or at least in the past, had tremendous influence. One of them is Congressman Stephen King. And we're hoping that Congressman King will support Ted Cruz. He likes Ted Cruz. He's very close to Ted Cruz. Let's hope he endorses Ted Cruz, because he has pull with a lot of the evangelical Christians. He has an organization of his own on the ground, and he could really be very helpful to Ted Cruz. Let's hope he endorses Ted Cruz. And the other guy that's very important is Bob Vanderplatz. Bob Vanderplatz is the head of a evangelical group called the Family Leader. And he's very influential, again, with the evangelicals. If Ted Cruz can pick up the endorsements of Bob Vanderplatz and of Congressman Stephen King, that might give him a boost among the evangelicals and might give him a boost going into Iowa. And if Ted Cruz can somehow pull off a victory in Iowa on February 1st, it's the first contest, that would give him a lot of momentum. So we have a chance here. We still have a shot. The question is, will the idiotic people who are supporting Donald Trump and Ben Carson finally wake up and understand how ridiculous this is and finally get behind the real guy that deserves our support, Ted Cruz? That's the question. Or will nothing affect them? No matter what, they're going to continue to support these two jokes. That's the question. Let's hope, God willing, that they get behind Ted Cruz. We're going to conduct a very active campaign for Ted Cruz on Facebook, on YouTube, and elsewhere. We're going to be doing everything we can to try to help him, and we want JTFers, of course, to help us as a team. By the way, just to remind our viewers of this video and of this program, why are we making such a fuss over the race for president? After all, we're a Kahanist organization. We're trying to save Israel, the people of Israel, the state of Israel. Why would we make such a fuss over a presidential election when we believe Israel should be independent of the United States militarily, economically? Israel should be completely independent in every area and shouldn't have to worry about who's president of the United States. The reason is because right now Israel does not act properly and acts like puppets of the United States, whoever the president is, and acts like puppets and slaves of the United States. That's who we have. We have Bibi Netanyahu and the disastrous leaders in Israel who do whatever the president of the United States tells them to do. And so as long as we have that very dangerous situation, we need a president, unfortunately, who's going to be pro-Israel. And I say unfortunately because if we were in power, it wouldn't make a difference. Israel would do what Israel has to do no matter what. But because of that very dangerous situation, we have to be concerned about who the president of the United States is. Iran is on the verge of building nuclear bombs. We need a president who's going to deal with that because the prime minister of Israel certainly isn't. He doesn't have the guts to do it. He doesn't have the guts to do anything, Netanyahu. And so we need a president who's going to do it, and the person who's the best candidate on Iran, as we've said many times, is Ted Cruz. So just wanted to remind you of that. So much is at stake here. Let's hope that this election, this was a good week for us, though, because Ted Cruz did well in that debate. Let's hope that this makes a difference. I have one other thing I want to announce to you. I should have announced this in the beginning, but I'm going to announce it now. We got two great domains ready. If Ted Cruz takes off, we got two great domains ready now. Two great domain names. JewsForCruz.org and JewsForCruz.com. If you go to JewsForCruz.org or JewsForCruz.com, you're now going to get our main page. So we're the Jews for Cruz. We are on the internet. We are the Jews for Cruz people. We're the Jews for Cruz. We've got the Jews for Cruz domains. We got the Jews for Cruz page. So that's something that can really take off if Cruz's campaign progresses, and especially if God willing, he becomes the Republican nominee. That could be a tremendous boost for us now because we are Jews for Cruz on the internet. So thank God that has happened. Just wanted you to know that. And so if you've ever had people who can't remember what our website is, all they have to remember right now until the election is JewsForCruz.org or JewsForCruz.com. We've got to work together here. This is a critical time. So much is at stake. We're faced with the danger of a nuclear holocaust from Iran. We're faced with tremendous dangers. We've got to work like a team. We've got to work together here. So much is at stake. And so we ask you to help us. When you see our Hebrew or English videos, promote those videos. Promote them on YouTube. Promote them on Facebook. Like them, favorite them, and tell people about them and promote them. And if you can copy the videos and put them up on your own YouTube accounts, you can do that as well. So help us with the Hebrew and the English videos. Secondly, we need your help on our main pages. If you speak Hebrew, go to hayamin.org. Go to the main page and participate. The more comments you leave, the more you participate, that helps us with the search engines. If you don't speak Hebrew, then at least do it on the English page, jtf.org. Shlomo does a great job on the English page, and the English page now is the Jews for Cruz page. It's jewsforcruz.org and jewsforcruz.com in addition to jtf.org. We've got a lot of domains now leading into that English language main page. So be active on the main page. The second thing you can do. Third, we need your prayers. Very important. And I really should have made this the first one. We need your prayers. Please pray for our success. Pray for JTF. Pray for Israel. Pray for Ted Cruz. Pray for all the things that we need to do to make this a better world and to save the world from the possibility of a terrible catastrophe of a nuclear Iran and nuclear holocaust and dangers, all these dangers to Israel, Jews getting stabbed and killed as warnings of much greater danger ahead. We need your prayers. And fourth, last but not least, of course we need financial support. That's our big downfall. If only we had more financial support, we could reach the whole people of Israel. We would change history and become a mass movement. Very, very quickly. Every check, every money order, every cash donation does make a difference. Help us. Some people prefer to send checks and money orders and cash donations to our post office box. That's great. Very helpful. Please. Very helpful. Please do so. God bless the great JTFers who are doing it. Other people, for convenience sake, would rather do it online. They don't want to have to send out a check or a money order cash donation through the mail. They'd rather do it online with their credit card. For convenience sake, you can do that too with PayPal. All you do is go to hayamin.org, which is our main page, and on top there's a donate button in English. You click on the donate button. In a couple of minutes, you can very conveniently, with your credit card, very conveniently and securely with your credit card through PayPal, so it's very secure, make a donation to JTF. So, help us. Help us, and together, let's fight to make a difference, and let's fight to save the situation. We can save the situation. We can change history if we all fight together as a team. If we all do this as a team, let's hope that we'll be able to make a big enough difference before it's too late. Now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start with Yamach Shmoda Islam, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, when are you going to leave that hideous city known as New York City, unquote? Well, I certainly do want to leave New York City. It's the highest tax city in the country. And with all the regulations, all the bureaucracy, all the crazy rules, it's a Bolshevik city. And I do want to leave. I don't have a timeline for you, but I definitely want to move out of New York City. Again, I don't have a timeline, but yes, I am planning to leave New York City, God willing. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of VP, Vice President, Joe Biden not running for president? Can you curse him? Thanks, unquote. Can I curse him? Well, he certainly is evil. Vice President Joe Biden is a very evil person. He has the same exact agenda as Barack Hussein Obama, the Muslim anti-Semite. So I do curse him. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav, which means may his name and memory be obliterated, may the name of the wicked rot. But I'm disappointed that he's not running for president because he was taking votes away from Hillary Sodom Arafat. Hillary Sodom Arafat, of course, is our main problem as far as a potential Democrat nominee, and Biden would have taken votes away from her and would have given her a harder time. So I did want him to run for that reason only, but he's an evil person. All of the Democrats are evil. That's a party which is left-wing, socialist, anti-Semitic, anti-American, just a horrible, evil party. And we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, One, where were you on November 4th, 1995, when you found out about the Rabin assassination? I was actually on my way home from synagogue. It was on Shabbat, and I was on my way home from synagogue. And now Binyamin writes, Two, how did you find out? Somebody on the street told me about it. Somebody in the street stopped me and told me about it. Three, what were your thoughts? Well, Yitzhak Rabin was a mass murderer of Jews. He murdered 16 Jewish heroes on the Alta Lena, 16 concentration camp survivors, but Holocaust survivors, whose families were murdered during the Holocaust. And these survivors came on a ship called the Alta Lena. They were members of the Irgun Tzvai Leumi, Etzel, and Rabin attacked the ship and murdered in cold blood 16 of these Jews because they were right-wing Jews. And Rabin was a Bolshevik, and David Ben-Gurion, Yimach Shmo, was a Bolshevik. And so Rabin murdered them on the Alta Lena. Later on in his life, of course, with the Oslo agreements, he was responsible for the murder of 1,800 Jews because of Oslo. 1,800 Jews have been massacred because of the Oslo agreements that Yitzhak Rabin and Shimon Peres imposed upon the people of Israel. So, I can't shed any tears over the assassination of a monster like Yitzhak Rabin. And he was a monster. What he did to the Jewish people was an unforgivable crime. Four, was Shabbat over yet in New York when you found out? No, as I said a moment ago, no. I was on my way home, actually, from synagogue, and it was still Shabbat. Five, discuss the Rabin festival that the leftists have for his Yortzeit, Rabin Memorial Day. Most people don't care about him anymore, and Rachel Imenu, 11th of Mar Cheshvan, and Rabbi Kahana, 18th of Mar Cheshvan, have bigger turnouts for their Yortzeits. Yes, all of that is true. The Yortzeit, or the annual commemoration of the deaths of Rabbi Kahana and of Rachel Imenu, of course, they're bigger than what you have for Yitzhak Rabin now. And Yitzhak Rabin, the majority of Israelis, I think, realize now that he was a disaster and that his policies were a disaster. Okay, let's go now to Lewinsky's Thinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, compare Fakistinian and Albanian Christians, quote unquote. Well, first of all, there are no Palestinian people, but if you're referring to the Arabs who live in the land of Israel who call themselves Christians, most of them work together with the Arab Muslims against America, against Israel, against the West. They're not real Christians. It's all fake. It's all fake. It's all a farce. And the Albanian so-called Christians, most of them do the same thing with the Albanian Muslims. They work with the Albanian Muslims. They're Albanians first. They support the Albanians against the Serbs. Again, it's a farce. A real Christian knows that you have to support Israel and you have to support the Jewish people in the land of Israel, that you're obligated to do it. And a real Christian who's not a hypocrite would not support the immoral Albanians against the Serbs. Lewinsky's Thinks now writes, Lewinsky's dream is a Judenrein New World Order Marxist state, unquote. Well, I think his dream is just to remain in power at all costs. And if that means that we have to have a Judenrein New World Order Marxist state, then so be it. But when Lewinsky's Thinks refers to Lewinsky, he's referring, by the way, to Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu at all costs wants to remain in power. And if that means he freezes Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem, which is the most anti-Semitic policy you can possibly have, then he'll impose that anti-Semitic policy and has done so for the past 6.5 years. If it means he has to allow thousands of Jews to be murdered, if it means he has to release thousands of Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists, if it means he has to allow Iran to become a nuclear bomb-making nation that threatens Israel with a nuclear holocaust, all of these things he allows and he has allowed and are his policies just so he can remain in power for another minute. And just so that he doesn't upset his boss, Barack Hussein Obama. So that's the type of leader he is. He is an evil person. And Lewinsky's Thinks now writes, majority of Westerners are now pro-Muslim, unquote. Well, yes, that's certainly true, because their policies are certainly anti-Israel. And you see in Europe what they're allowing to take place. And they were willing, even in America, the Americans, who are not as bad as the Europeans yet, at least many of them are not, even in America, they elected Barack Hussein Obama. I would have to agree with your statement, unfortunately. And Lewinsky's Thinks now writes, how long until USA criminalizes criticism of Islam, sodomy, and blacks, both at the state and the federal government level, unquote. That is where we're headed. That is where we're headed. I agree with you. And you already lose your job if you say anything critical of Islam or critical of the so-called gay agenda or critical of affirmative action or critical of any of the politically correct groups. You dare say anything, just express your opinion. You lose your job, you can lose your business, you can be thrown out of school, suspended in school if you're in college or high school. So we're already creating blacklists of people and already making sure that people can't be employed, can't support themselves, can't get an education unless they accept the politically correct line. That's already happening in this country. How far off are we when the day will come when it will become a crime to express your own opinion? I mean, we're headed in that direction unless people wake up and things change. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to the reason I'm reaching back over here. If you see me reaching back, is because I have to scroll down on the computer in order to see the questions. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, now that I have sent their Facebook link, what now is your opinion of the current Tag Meir movement in Israel, unquote. Okay, I apologize, Chicago Jew. You asked me about Tag Meir, this left-wing group, and I thought you were referring to Tag Mechir. Tag Mechir are the underground Jewish fighters in Israel. And they are definitely right-wing Jewish patriots, the Tag Mechir movement. But this group, and I think that they, the name Tag Meir, they took it from Tag Mechir. They're saying, oh, we're the left-wing version. We're the enlightened version of this. So they deliberately, this is a play on the name of Tag Mechir. They're calling themselves Tag Meir. And Tag Meir is a left-wing evil movement of Judenrat Kapo traitors. They say that their goal is to fight against the racism of Israel. That Israel's racist, and they're fighting against the racism of Israel. The only racism in Israel is against Jews. The Israeli government has an anti-Semitic policy. If you're Jewish, you're not allowed to build homes in Judea and Samaria, your biblical homeland, or even in your capital, Jerusalem. That's anti-Semitism. If you're a Jew like Chaim ben Pesach, you're not allowed to make aliyah. Millions of Arabs who hate Israel, who want to destroy Israel, they're welcome in Israel. They sit in the Knesset, they praise Arab terrorism, they praise the murder of Jews, they call for genocide against the Jewish people. They can sit in the Israeli parliament, in the Israeli Knesset. But Rabbi Meir Kahana was banned from running for the Knesset. And Chaim ben Pesach is not allowed even to make aliyah. I mean, this is a nation with policies that are anti-Semitic. If this happened in any other country, if in the United States you said Jews are not allowed to build in a certain section of the United States, wouldn't everybody be screaming anti-Semitism? Justifiably? This is happening in the so-called Jewish state. So the fact is, Tag Meir talks about racism in Israel. These filthy, slimy animals, all of them should die of cancer. Every single one of them. Any Jew who criticizes Israel because they say Israel's not left-wing enough, they say Israel's racist, they're not left-wing enough, and they want to pressure Israel to commit suicide even faster. Any Jew who does that should die of cancer. And that should be the best thing that should happen to them. Yimach shmam v'zechram shem reshaim yirkav. That's what I think of that hideous organization, Tag Meir. And thank you, Chicago Jew. And again, I'm sorry for the fact that I didn't realize what you were referring to last week. We go now to Nekama, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, please discuss one, Rabbi, quote-unquote, Wentworth Arthur Matthew. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wentworth Arthur Matthew, called him a rabbi. What a farce. This is a guy, he died many years ago, but he was one of the founders, he was one of the people who started the Black Hebrew movement. You know, the only Jews are blacks, and the white Jews and the Jews from other groups are not real Jews. The Jews in Israel, all 6 million Jews in Israel, are not real Jews. No. Who are the real Jews? A bunch of criminals and convicts from the south side of Chicago. They're the real Jews. So, you know, scum. I mean, just pure scum. And Nekama now asks about Ze'ev Eckstein. Ze'ev Eckstein, or as we say in Hebrew, Ze'ev Eckstein. Ze'ev Eckstein is a Jew who, at the age of 24 in 1957, assassinated Rudolf Kastner. Yimach shmo v'zichro. Eckstein was part of Lehi. Lehi was a Jewish underground organization of Jewish underground freedom fighters, heroes. Eckstein assassinated Kastner because Kastner was the head of the Judenrat in Hungary and helped the Nazis murder hundreds of thousands of Jews. Did everything he could to help them. Even after the Holocaust, he went to Nuremberg to get Nazi war criminals off the hook. He testified in favor and to get Nazi mass murderers from the SS, he got them off the hook, who were on trial for mass murder and war crimes. He got them acquitted. And this piece of filth, Rudolf Kastner, David Ben-Gurion defended him, Chaim Weizmann, all the leaders of Israel defended him. Chaim ben Pesach can't make aliyah. But a Jew who helped the Nazis murder hundreds of thousands of Jews during the Holocaust, who was the head of the Judenrat, he was treated like royalty in Israel. And finally, even a left-wing Israeli court ruled that he had helped the Nazis and collaborated with the Nazis. Even a left-wing Israeli court made that ruling in 1957. And shortly after that, Ze'ev Eckstein, to avenge the blood of all the Jews that were murdered because of Kastner, assassinated him, shot him to death in 1957 in Israel. That's who Ze'ev Eckstein was. By the way, the granddaughter of Rudolf Kastner is now sitting in the Knesset. She's a member of the Knesset now. And Yad Vashem, which is supposed to be the memorial to the Holocaust people, they honor Rudolf Kastner, who helped the Nazis murder hundreds of thousands of Jews. They give him honors and awards. That just shows you what you're dealing with in Israel, what the Jewish establishment is like. In Israel and in America, the Jewish establishment is the same traitor establishment we had. The reason we had a Holocaust is because of Jewish leaders like that. And now Nekama asks about three, Sammy Davis Jr. Well, Sammy Davis Jr. pretended to be Jewish. He had a deformed conversion. The whole thing was a farce because he saw that the Jews dominate Hollywood. I mean, the Jews were, now I don't even think they do anymore. But at one time, the Jews had a dominant position. And by the way, when the Jews dominated Hollywood in those days, Hollywood was actually coming up with very, very good, wholesome, magnificent, uplifting movies in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. Hollywood was dominated by Jews in those years. So he saw all the producers, all the directors, all the agents, not only in Hollywood, but in Las Vegas, on Broadway. He saw that they were mostly Jewish. So he figured, the smart thing to do, I'm going to convert to Judaism, I'll get in better with these Jews. Little did he realize how self-hating the vast majority of those Jews are. The vast majority of those Jews are trying to run away from their Judaism. He didn't understand this because who can understand self-hating Jewish behavior? But that was Sammy Davis Jr., a complete phony. And four, Black September. Nekama asks about Black September. That's the fourth thing he asks about. Black September is a Muslim Nazi terrorist organization that was created by Yasser Arafat and the PLO. And by Mahmoud Abbas Abu Mazen, who now gets billions of dollars from Netanyahu and the Israeli government and from American taxpayers. They created an organization, Abu Mazen Mahmoud, or sometimes he calls himself Abu Mazen, sometimes he calls himself Mahmoud Abbas. Abu Mazen Mahmoud Abbas. He's the head of the PLO terrorists, the PLO Fatah terrorists now in Ramallah. And he and Arafat created Black September. Black September carried out the massacre of the Israeli athletes in Munich in 1972. 11 Israeli athletes were murdered by Black September terrorists. Abu Mazen Mahmoud Abbas was actually in charge of that operation. He was the one that gave them the money and was in charge and gave them the order to go and murder the Jews. And they carried out many other terrorist attacks. They assassinated, by the way, Senator Bobby Kennedy, after he won the California Democratic primary for president. Bobby Kennedy was on his way to running for the presidency. He might have run against Richard Nixon and become the Democratic nominee in 1968. It was possible. He had just won the California primary. Sirhan Sirhan, an Arab terrorist, an Arab Muslim terrorist from Black September, on orders of Arafat and Abu Mazen, assassinated Bobby Kennedy. And even though Bobby Kennedy was assassinated by Muslim Nazi terrorists, the Kennedys, of course, are pro-Arab and anti-Israel and anti-Semites. What can I say? Once Jew-hating scum, always Jew-hating scum. Thank you, Nekama. We go now to Gam Bashan veGam Gilad, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Dear Chaim, please say a few words on the passing of the Rabin Festival. How should we really commemorate his memory and what is his legacy? Thanks," unquote. Well, I discussed this actually in an earlier question, Gambashan. Thank you for the question, but I discussed this actually earlier. Rabin's legacy is mass murder of Jews. What he did led to the mass murder of Jews. Giving away Jewish land, which is what Oslo is all about, surrendering Jewish land, creating a PLO, independent PLO Fatah, Muslim Nazi terrorist state in the heartland of biblical Israel. This can only lead to horrific consequences. One thing we've learned from history, every concession that Israel makes, every withdrawal, every retreat, every time Israel gives something away, It leads to the murder of Jews. It leads to Jewish blood being shed. Every single concession, every single withdrawal. It doesn't lead to peace. It leads to more war, more terrorism, and more insecurity for the Jewish people. And God forbid, if we create a so-called Palestinian state, it could lead to a Holocaust. And Rabin's legacy is that he completely betrayed the Jewish people and supported Israeli national suicide and was responsible for the murder of many Jews. And if, God forbid, all of his policies would be implemented, all the things he was trying to do would be implemented, God forbid, it could lead to a Holocaust for the Jewish people easily. God forbid. Thank you, Gam Bashan. We go now to Israel Chai, who writes, and I quote, "Who were Eugene Sanctuary and Henry Klein?" Unquote. Well, I'm surprised you know about this, Israel Chai. Eugene Sanctuary was a Nazi Klansman who was put on trial in 1944 for sedition during World War II. And Henry Klein was his self-hating Jewish lawyer. Eugene Sanctuary supported Nazi Germany, and, you know, in the middle of a war, in those days you support the enemy in the middle of a war, you would get arrested and charged with a crime. In those days that wasn't tolerated. So he was put on trial for sedition in 1944 during World War II, and again, his attorney, the guy who right away ran up to represent him, was Henry Klein, even though Sanctuary was a Nazi and supported Nazi Germany. Henry Klein, the Jew, right away volunteered to vigorously defend him. Israel Chai now writes, "What does Trudeau mean for Israel and Canada?" Unquote. Trudeau is an anti-Semite. His father was an anti-Semite. He's an anti-Semite. His policies are going to be anti-Israel and pro-Arab. And why the Canadian people voted for this piece of garbage, I don't know. I mean, Harper was certainly not as conservative as I'd like to see, and there are certain things he did. He certainly did some things that I wasn't happy with in Canada, because I'm a real right-winger and I believe in real right-wing policies. But he was certainly better than Trudeau. I mean, Trudeau's is a disaster, just a complete disaster. Just insane. Canada, America has gone crazy. Canada's gone crazy. The whole world is crazy. Israel Chai now writes, Leah Ramini is coming, I don't know, is that how you pronounce her name? Ramini? Is coming out against a retardology hard. Is she good? Unquote. Well, no, I don't think she's good. I think I'm glad that she's attacking the Church of Scientology, which is a cult, an insane cult. Another example of how crazy the world is. All these actors and actresses joining the Church of Scientology, put together by somebody who was a science fiction writer, and who it's so insane. So insane. It's just an insane cult. And she's exposing it. She's exposing how corrupt they are and how terrible it is. But she herself is no angel. I mean, even evil people can do good. I mean, their motivation may not be the right motivation, but even evil people sometimes can perform a public service. And she had a Jewish mother, a self-hating Jewish mother who intermarried. Her father was not Jewish, mother Jewish. And she was part of the Scientology cult. She herself, by the way, halachically she's Jewish because her mother was Jewish, but she herself intermarried, and she herself is involved with all types of terrible things. And I mean, almost every acting role she had was immoral and evil, so she's not a good person. She's not at all a good person. But she's attacking the Scientology cult. Good. You know, good. Even if evil people attack other evil people and expose them. Good. Thank you, Israel Chai. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Please rebuke this nonsense by Judith Lewis." Quote, "Islam has some tenets that put Judaism's regard for women to shame. Muhammad told the creation myth without holding Eve solely responsible for eating that apple, never pronounced menstruating women untouchable, and granted women property and inheritance rights far beyond those of 19th century England," unquote. And then Shmesh Islam writes, complete your answer with blessing, quote-unquote, to this creature. Okay. Well, I mean, look. Anybody that says that Islam is good to women, anybody that makes that statement, you know, to put them in an insane asylum would be committing a terrible injustice to the people in the insane asylum. I think the people in the insane asylum would rebel and say, hey, we don't want to be housed with nuts like this. We don't want to be in the same institution with people this crazy. This type of talk, this isn't fit for an insane asylum. I mean, this is a religion where Muhammad says in the hadith that women go to hell, that women are going to hell because they complain too much. I wonder why they complain. Just because they get their clitorises cut off when they're 6 years old in Islam? Just because they have to wear a tent over their head in the hot sun and they're treated worse than cattle? Just because they're not allowed to speak or do anything in Islamic society? Just because when they're raped, the rape victim is murdered in what's called an honor killing? But the rapist goes free and the rape victim is the one who's murdered as if she did something wrong when she's raped. So, you know, of course, so they complain. So Muhammad said they complain too much. I wonder why they complain. What are they complaining about? They have it so good in Islam. It's just, it's beyond insane. It's beyond insane. And, I would not lower myself to engage in an argument with somebody who's saying that Islam is actually nice to women or good for women. It's so absurd and so crazy that it's beyond the pale. People who would believe in that, good for them. Let them believe in that, and they're gonna get what they get on the day of judgment. And of course, you want me to bless her. Of course, Yimach Shma v'Zichra Shem Reshaim Yirkav, which means may her name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to Uncle Bourbon, who writes, and I quote, why do you think so-called conservatives support Fiorina? What makes her better than someone like Cruz in their eyes, unquote? Because they want a woman. Because they want a woman. Just like the Ben Carson people want a black guy. They love this. They think, oh, we got a black guy running. You see, this proves we're not racists. They're always trying to prove themselves. They're going to prove they're not racist and destroy the United States, proving it. Failurina, Carly Failurina, nearly bankrupted Hewlett Packard. We did a video on her exposing what she did. You know, if you had put your money in Hewlett Packard, you would have lost 60%, at least 60% of your money during the time when Carly Failurina was in charge. I mean, she was a catastrophe. Everywhere she went, she was a catastrophe. And now she's going to be president of the United States? It's insane. It's just insane. Thankfully, she doesn't seem to be taking off in the polls. She doesn't seem to be going very... Her candidacy doesn't seem to be going very far, thankfully. But you have other so-called conservatives and Republicans who are supporting two other candidates in large number, Ben Carson and Donald Trump, who are just as bad as Failurina. It's unbelievable. Thank you, Uncle Bourbon. And now we go to Nevsky, who writes, and I quote, hi, Chaim. What are your thoughts on Daniel Pipes of the Middle East Forum and Bridget Gabriel of Act for America? Thanks. Okay. I'm glad you asked about both of them in the same sentence because it really shows the difference. Daniel Pipes is a self-hating Jew. He's the phony right, phony so-called conservative, a self-hating Jew. He's someone, when he was younger, he went to live in Muslim Nazi Egypt. In 1971, he went to live in Egypt. In 1971, do you know what it is to live in Egypt in 1971 when Egypt was... They weren't even faking it then. They were openly saying, we're going to push the Jews into the sea, we're going to finish Hitler's job, we're going to exterminate the Jewish people. That's when he chose to go and live for several years in Egypt. He was fascinated with Islam. and fascinated with Arabs. And so he learned Arabic and he learned about the Quran. He loves Islam. He loves Islam, loves the Quran. Now, he says he's against Arab terrorists and he speaks out against Iran and he speaks out against certain bad Arabs and Muslims. That's true. But he says it's not Islam. It's not true Islam, which is a complete lie. The problem isn't that they're distorting Islam. The problem is this is the real Islam. Osama bin Laden is Islam. The Islamic State is Islam. So, you know, he lies about that and he says, no, real Islam is not that. We have to support the moderate Muslims. Moderate Muslims? That's like saying you have to support the moderate Nazis. I mean, that's like saying, you know, that they're moderate Nazis and extremist Nazis. They're moderate terrorists and extremist terrorists. I mean, give me a break. Moderate Muslims? Mohammed was a moderate? Mohammed was a religion? Mohammed preached peace? He was a preached religion? He preached the religion of peace? The word love isn't mentioned once in the Quran. The whole Quran is about slaughter and extermination and jihad and holy war and capture your enemies and don't be friends with the Jews and the Christians, they're your enemies. And the whole Quran is filled with this. That's the whole Quran. Anyway, that's Daniel Pipes. And you know, in addition to that, Daniel Pipes favors surrendering Judea and Samaria to Jordan. He says he's against the so-called Palestinian state, but he says Judea and Samaria, the biblical heartland of Israel, should be surrendered instead to Muslim Nazi Jordan. Oh, thank you very much. In other words, the Jewish people don't have a right to their own biblical heartland, to Judea and Samaria. Israel would still go back to the pre-1967 borders under Daniel Pipes' plan. Except he would surrender it to Jordan instead of to the PLO. I mean, come on. Oh, pathetic. Pathetic. Now compare him to Bridget Gabriel of Active America. As you asked about Bridget Gabriel, she's not Jewish. She's a Lebanese Christian. I like Bridget Gabriel. I like her. I think she's courageous. I think she tells it like it is. She tells it like it is about Islam and about the Arabs. I mean, she puts people like Daniel Pipes to shame. I think she's good. Thank you, Nevsky. And we go now to Bracha Chazaka, who writes, and I quote, "Who should be blocked from Eretz Yisrael instead of you?" Unquote. Oh, I think anybody who wants to undermine Israel and who works to destroy Israel and hurt Israel should not be allowed into the country. And unfortunately, all the enemies of Israel are welcomed. All the self-hating Jews, all the enemies of Israel are welcomed into Israel. The black Hebrew, you know, there are 10,000 black Hebrews in Israel who say that all the other Jews are imposters and that Israel has no right to exist and all the other Jews should be killed. All the other Jews should be murdered. And this is what they say, this is what they preach. All of them should be murdered. And because the only Jews that should be allowed, the only so-called Jews who are real Jews, are the black Hebrews. And all the others should be murdered. And 10,000 of these monsters, of these disgusting animals, they're allowed into Israel. They're living in Israel, and I'm not allowed to set foot in the country. And, and then you have millions, of course, you have millions of Muslims in Israel who want to openly vote for parties that are committed to destroying the Jewish people, openly praise Islamic terrorism and genocide. They're allowed in Israel, but I'm barred. So, if it were up to me, the enemies of Israel would not be allowed in Israel. The enemies of the Jewish people who are hurting and endangering the Jewish people, they would not be allowed in Israel, and I would be. Bracha Chazaka now writes, "Who is more emotionally irritating, overt anti-Semites or Erev Rav misleaders?" Unquote. Well, it's more than just emotionally irritating. Erev Rav misleaders are more dangerous to the Jewish people. Our number one enemy are not Gentile anti-Semites. Not the Arabs, not the Muslims, not Obama, not the European Union, not the UN. They're not our number one enemy. None of those people are our number one enemies. Our number one enemy are the Erev Rav. That's number one on the list. The Erev Rav are the self-hating Jewish traitors, including the rulers of Israel. They are the number one problem for the Jewish people. Because if the Jewish people got their act together, and if the Jewish people supported the right policies, no one would be able to touch us. God would bring redemption to the world. If the Jews got their act together, God would bring redemption to the whole world. This would be the end. It would be the end of all our enemies. God would put an end to it. So our number one problem are these self-hating Judenrat leaders and self-hating Erev Rav enemies of their own people. They're our number one problem. And thank you, Bracha Chazaka. Now we go to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, please discuss UNESCO declaring the tombs of Rachel Imenu and Avraham Avinu as non-Jewish, strictly Muslim Nazi sites," unquote. Well, you know, I expect this from UNESCO and I expect this from the UN. The problem is all the Jews that agree with this and are supporting this. Look at all the Jews who support UNESCO. Look at all the Jews who support the UN. Look at all the Jews who are involved with all the anti-Israel activity here. That, you know, of course the UN is anti-Israel, and of course the UN are anti-Semites. But it's the Jewish anti-Semites that really is, that is something that bothers me 1,000 times as much as all of this. As much as, you know, even though I do think the UN is an evil organization, and I don't think they should get a penny from the United States or from the taxpayers of this country. Thank you, Hiram. And now we move on to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim HaTzadik, please rank the boroughs in terms of which is most disgusting versus habitable," unquote. Well, the five boroughs, for those of you who don't live in New York City, the five boroughs of New York City, boroughs are counties. We still use that British term here in New York City. Boroughs mean counties. There are five counties in New York City. The worst is the Bronx. No question about it. The Bronx is the worst. I would say Manhattan is the second worst, even though Manhattan is so expensive and everybody wants to live there. I wouldn't want to live there. It's a bunch of dirty buildings and all extreme leftists. It's a disgusting, and sodomites, and just a horrible place. Bronx is the worst. Manhattan is second worst. Brooklyn third worst. Queens, and then Staten Island. I put it in that order. And then the reverse being true, Staten Island is the most habitable. But living in New York City in general, it's very, very hard to live in New York City. It's because of the taxes, the regulations, the Bolshevism. It's not easy living in New York City. And Jews who can leave New York City and Jews should go to Eretz Yisrael. Jews belong in Eretz Yisrael. But why they'd want to live in a horrible place like New York City when we have such a beautiful country is beyond my understanding. I know that there are a lot of problems in Israel. I know we have terrible leaders in Israel, but it's our land, it's our homeland, and it's certainly a beautiful country. And New York City, I don't understand why anybody would want to live in New York City. And I live in this city for 59 years. And I don't understand why anybody would want to live here. Gimatria now writes, "Which is the most evil synagogue, quote-unquote, in Queens?" Well, all the Reform and Conservative, I don't go to them, so I don't know. All the Reform and Conservative temples, of course, all of them are evil because they're not real synagogues. They're all frauds. So I would say they're all tied. They're all in a tie for being the worst. Because that's also a cult, the Conservative, the Reform, the Reconstructionist. That's not Judaism. Thank you, Gimatria. And now we're going to Black Sabbath, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, do you remember the killing of Alan Berg?" Unquote. Yeah, of course. Alan Berg was killed in 1984. He was the Denver, Colorado, self-hating Jewish liberal talk show host. And he was killed by Nazis, by Nazis who, Yimach Shmam, who shot him in his driveway. Yep, of course. Of course I remember. He was disgusting, and the Nazis who killed him were disgusting, of course. Black Sabbath now writes, two, please discuss, and then there are three people here, Hugh Hefner, Larry Flint, Ron Jeremy, thanks. All three of them are involved in pornography. Well, I think you know that I don't like pornography, and Hugh Hefner, of course, was the founder of Playboy magazine and has been involved in pornography most of his life. He must be 90, about 90 years old by now. Larry Flint is another pornographic piece of garbage who... These people spread evil. They spread evil. Ron Jeremy is actually a self-hating Jew who was involved in, I don't know, thousands of pornographic films, probably more than any other porno actor ever. He's probably the record breaker on porno acting. And he's a Jew. He's a self-hating Jew. So all three of them are spreading spiritual evil, which is obviously very destructive for society. They're spreading decadence and evil, and the consequences of it are horrendous. Thank you, Black Sabbath. And we go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, fondest memory of Rabbi Kahana. Oh, that's hard because there's so many. There's so many. I think probably how he handled being a member of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, for the 4 years when the Jewish people in Israel were blessed to have this great man as a member of the Knesset. You know, he got tremendous publicity at that time. And all of it negative, all of them attacking him, just attacking him. But the more they attacked him and the more they went after him, the more popular he became. And he handled it so well. I mean, they were attacking him day and night. He was on the front page of all the newspapers almost every day. He was, you know, they actually did a study and they found that he was getting more publicity in the Israeli media as a single member of the Knesset than the prime minister. I mean, they actually did a study showing that he got more mention on television, radio, and newspapers. This is before the internet, of course. This is the 1980s, before the age of the internet. But he was getting more mention on television, radio, and newspapers in Israel than the prime minister. And all of it attacking him. And he handled it so effectively and so professionally and was such a genius at what he was doing. I was in awe of how effectively he handled the attacks and the publicity and just everything that was coming his way. How well he handled everything. I was really in awe of how he did it. And of what a true professional he was. He was not only a righteous, magnificently righteous, God-fearing, great Talmid Chacham, but he also was a real pro in how he handled these things. We really lost an incredible, an unbelievable, magnificent leader. Dr. Dan now writes, two, the biggest lesson learned from him. Okay, the biggest lesson learned from Rabbi Kahana. I would say faith in Hashem. I would say faith in Hashem, emunah. He always spoke about emunah, which means faith in Hebrew. That we have to believe in Hashem, and we have to believe in the Torah. He taught Jews how to believe. And why. And logically, and why. And why it was obvious that there is a God, that the Bible and the Torah are true, and that we have a special destiny. I would say that message of faith and belief and the need to follow the Torah, that was probably the most important lesson we learned from him, along with many others. Dr. Dan now writes, three, could Meir Ettinger be the anointed one? Unquote. Meir Ettinger, by the way, is his grandson, and he's now in prison on terrible injustice for administrative detention. Administrative detention means he gets no trial, no judge, no lawyer. They just throw you in jail because they feel like it. In Israel, they have a law like that. In the United States, they'd never have a law like that, but in Israel, they do. And so Dr. Dan wants to know, could he be the one? I guess you mean, could he be a natural successor to his grandfather? I don't know. I don't know. I hope so. Obviously, I hope so, God willing. I think he's certainly very brave. He has his grandfather's bravery, that's for sure. He's very gutsy, very brave. Whether or not he would be the leader to succeed his grandfather, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know him well enough, and I don't know enough about whether or not that's whether or not he's the one who now can lead the movement in Israel. I don't know the answer to that, but obviously, God willing, I hope so. I hope so. Dr. Dan now writes, for CNNBC debate, unquote. Well, I actually, Dr. Dan, you beat me to that. I discussed that. That was my whole opening, so I've already discussed that. But Dr. Dan often figures out what I'm going to discuss before the show because Dr. Dan is very perceptive. And five, Dvar Torah, this week's parasha. This week's parasha is Parashat Vayera. Here we see Avraham Avinu, Abraham, our father. And he circumcises himself. He performs Brit Milah on himself, the circumcision. And he's 99 years old now. And he circumcised the other males in his household as well. And he's recuperating. 99-year-old guy circumcising himself. That's rough. Very rough. I mean, really heroic. And he does this, and he's sitting at his... But he's, even though he's recuperating, even though he's still recovering from this very, very rough... very, very rough surgery, if we can put it that way... He's sitting on a very hot day at the entrance of his tent, still waiting to find people that he could bring to God, that he could explain to them about there's one God. Still, even while he's recuperating, a 99-year-old guy recuperating from major, very rough surgery. That was Avraham Avinu. And then three angels appear before him. He thought they were just human beings at first. He thought they were just ordinary people passing through. But we learned that they were actually malachim, that they were actually angels. Now, an interesting thing here is the machloket, the disagreement between Harambam with a mem at the end, Harambam and Haramban with a nun at the end. Harambam and Haramban disagree about what really happened with those three angels. Harambam says this was a dream. This isn't something that actually happened when Avraham was awake. This had to be a dream because Harambam says you can't see angels unless you're prophesizing. And we know that in the Jewish faith, we believe the only person who ever had prophecy when he was awake was Moshe Rabbeinu, was Moses. All the other prophets, it was in dreams while they were dreaming. So Avraham Avinu, when he was having a prophetic vision, he was, of course, dreaming. So, Harambam says, spiritual beings you cannot see in the physical world. You can only see them in dreams when you're prophesizing, when you're having a prophetic vision in dreams. So this had to be a dream. Even though what they said to him was all true and was all going to happen, nevertheless, he was having a prophetic vision, but it was a dream. He didn't actually... In this world, he didn't actually meet three angels. The three angels came to him in a dream. That's what Harambam says. Harambam says, no way! No way! This really happened. And, you know, and the two argue back and forth. It's just fascinating, you know, the argument. And they're so brilliant. The arguments back and forth and the citations back and forth. It's just incredibly brilliant. It's so fascinating studying what the great... the scholars of Torah Judaism taught us. It's just absolutely fascinating. Thank you, Dr. Dan, and I want to thank everybody else for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.